Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Legal matters.
All right. Thank you so much for staying. And really, I appreciate your voice notes. They're really interesting views. And I concur with the very first voice note that came through that absolutely, it's not just the police, it's not just the communities. Everybody should be interested in the well-being of our students. It's not even just Eskom. It's Joburg Water. Because without water, you've seen what happens in a home, for instance. So I absolutely agree with that. And thank you also to all of the other voice notes that came through. It is that time when Thabi Seng is in the building, in the flesh, here for Legal Matters. 086-000-959. You can send voice notes on 063-688-0959. You can bring any question. Absolutely any question. And if you want to remain anonymous, that's also very welcome. Thabi Seng, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Ospimelo.
Oh, we couldn't hear you there.
Oh. We good? Good evening.
We are now good. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We are so good. You've got interesting cases that you want us to browse through first,
yeah,
before we get to some of the calls.
Yes.
DNA testing to prove paternity.
So we always say, please clear up your life before you pass. I don't know how many times I've said this. Please sort your life out before you die.
We have preached and preached and preached. And so what do you have for us today?
So in this case, the man did not clear his life up before he died. So what happened is that it was a case in the Eastern Cape High Court wherein now this particular individual has since passed, and now biological children from a previous relationship come in and say, but he's also our father.
And people that they did not know.
They did not know of. So now the children and the wife, mm-hmm, who are known, mm-hmm, are like, but no, what do you mean?
We didn't. He never really said existed. Anything.
Yes, at least if we knew, it would be something else. You are new in our lives. And then what they then said, the family of the deceased that is known, said, okay, let's do this. Let's prove that you are the kids of this man.
Yeah.
Let's do a DNA test. So what would be the normal thing to do when somebody has died? We test the next relative.
Yes.
But then the family saying, no. If we do that, it doesn't give us 100% that you are the deceased's child. So we will exhume the deceased.
Yeah.
Test his blood, his DNA, and compare it to yours. And then the kids from the other relationship are like, but no, that's a bit extreme. We have uncles and aunts who we can use. No, we refuse. It has to be him or nothing. And you are not going to inherit if you're refusing, right? So eventually, it lands up in the court for the court to decide if this is an extreme measure to exhume the corpse of the deceased.
Am I incorrect in my understanding of the fact that you will never get 100% DNA result?
Yes,
never.
Ever.
Even if it is the father.
Correct.
It would be 90-something percent.
99.9 from what I
am. Point something.
Yes.
But it will never be 100%.
Yeah. Okay. So that was also the argument of these new kids.
Yeah.
They were saying that even if we exhume his body, it's not going to be 100%. But it is closer to 100% when it's directly from him versus if it's an aunt, an uncle, whatever the case may be. So now it goes to court. So when it goes to court, the court is now asked to decide whether it can compel adults to submit to DNA testing to prove paternity, and B, whether exhuming the deceased for DNA testing aligns with the interest of justice.
Honestly. And?
So the court says no. The respondents, obviously, they oppose the application, saying that DNA testing on the deceased remains can provide a conclusive evidence of paternity. And then the court considered both the need for the truth in legal matters and respect for personal privacy. The court also emphasized that while compelling DNA tests can aid in justice, such measures must not conflict with the public morals or policies regarding the treatment of the deceased. Even with that, the court said, but looking at the facts of this particular case,
mm-hmm,
I believe it is proper that the body be exhumed, but at the cost.
at the cost of the ones who want to exhume.
Correct. So the applicants will pay for the cost of all of that, make sure that these people submit themselves for a DNA testing. I think the period was 30 days, if I'm not mistaken. Within 30 days, they submit themselves for testing, and even their blood being drawn and all of that is at the cost of the applicant because they are insisting on it. So the judge did this because of the facts of the case and the fact that these people are adults, and he doesn't want a situation where this matter keeps coming back to the court.
Yeah, I was going to say, is one of the things that the court would consider to end the conflict, because it may be an ongoing matter, because there really is already lack of trust.
Correct. And that was one of the things that he says, weighing it against the privacy of the deceased. He's no longer here to fight for his privacy. The people who are supposed to protect his privacy are actually the ones who want to remove that privacy and have the DNA testing done. And then that's how it ends. I wish we knew what the outcome was, because obviously this court order was just to compel the exhumation and the DNA. So now the question is, now that they've done the DNA testing, did the result come out positive to say that he is dead? And if so, do they inherit?
You know, one of the things that I'm sure you've seen is that sometimes it doesn't matter what the outcome is.
Yeah.
If people are invested in fighting,
they will fight
because maybe someone's going to fight about the 0.0%.
And say that, well, because this doesn't show, therefore
there will be another reason they're going to bring forward to fight.
Yeah. So that was very interesting, but the reason I wanted to touch on it is because we keep saying, fix your stuff before you pass.
And you know, some of the people, I think the logic is that when I'm gone, I'm gone. Not that simple.
Not really that simple.
I mean, it can be really, really ugly. And so, again, fix your stuff before you go.
Exactly.
All right. The issue of medical negligence.
Yes. So, I found this interesting. We don't do medical negligence, but I found it interesting in the manner in which the court dealt with this situation. So, a mom gave birth, and then, unfortunately, her child had cerebral palsy. But it was such an extreme case that this kid has been unconscious basically since birth.
Yeah.
So it was at the negligence at the hands of the hospital. And now the question was that the court had to deal with in the High Court in this application was for obviously general damages and general damages and also the central issue of whether an unconscious claimant can actually get general damages. So there's the normal damages as a result of the child being born that way. Mm-hmm. And then there's always the extra, that is the other things that the child would not be able to live for or have access to as a result of the situation that they're in.
And for me, that's the interesting bit in how you calculate the damages.
Yes.
We're not a suing nation. We're not those people. So these are always cases that are interesting in the sense that they set lots of precedents.
Correct.
Because in an instance where there is no real loss of income that existed before.
Yes.
How do you calculate what the potential of the person would have been?
So now this is where actuaries come into play. So actuaries would determine that if this child was born normal, the expectancy is that within the first 17, 18 years they would be in high school. And then they look at the different kinds of things that would influence the direction in which this child would go. So if they are born in a Soweto Deep Kloof somewhere, then it is likely that this person may end up doing this kind of job. If this person is born in a brinestone somewhere,
society,
one tall
icon. You can already see my problem with this. This painting of the scenario, because who's to say you can have a child born in Bryanston and as useless as ever and dependent on parents until they die,
yeah,
actually,
yeah,
and expensively so,
yes. So, but these are the things that actuaries are hired as experts to the court to try and give an idea of what this child could possibly have become, but for the negligence of the hospital. And then with that information, that's how we come to an estimated amount that comes from experts. Even the medical experts would be saying, okay, now that we've dealt with what this child could potentially have been, now we're dealing with the medical requirements that this child is going to need. And then that is calculated based on the state of that particular child. And then thereafter, we look at it's medical, it is the actuaries, it is... Yeah, it's those two. Those are the two that actually speak to how the award would be calculated. And then that is combined. And then this is what you are entitled to. So general damages is the presumption that you would have or you would have been deprived of a normal life. So the argument was this 2.2 million that was deemed as general damages because the award for the actuaries and the medical everything was 15 million and some change.
Yeah.
So over and above that, there was a 2.2 million for the general damages.
Okay.
So the MEC then took just the 2.2 part on appeal to say, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. Why? Because this child has been in a vegetative state since birth. So how then do we quantify what they would be missing when they never knew anything to miss in the first place? They haven't been off the bed. They haven't opened their eyes. They haven't smelled food. They haven't run around. Nothing. So how then do we quantify this 2.2? Where does it come from? We can accept the 15. We understand where it comes from. But this 2.2 doesn't make any sense. So in the appeal court, the court said that the High Court failed to meaningfully assess the child's condition, conflating pain and suffering with loss of amenities and disregarding the interplay between special and general damages. Special is those 15. General is the one we're talking about. Expert evidence confirmed the child's permanent vegetative state, rendering him incapable of appreciating his loss. So then how are we awarding this 2.2 when he, I think it was a he, doesn't know what it is that they're losing in the first place?
Yeah.
So now the court, the SCA, then looked at that and said, you know what, in actual fact, we agree with you, MEC. The 2.2 million has to go. The 15 will remain because what are we compensating for? This child knows nothing apart from what they are currently living, which is a permanent vegetative state.
In the other, the 15, the money that falls under that 15, is the child in healthcare facility?
Yes, yes. Healthcare facility.
And who's paying for the long-term
the family?
And no one's made provisions for that?
Correct. That's why they sued.
So but I'm just looking at that amount that... because another thing about life expectancy of someone like this, there is no telling.
Yeah, there is no telling. And because they'll be supported by medicine, maybe they may live longer than the 15 million.
That's my point.
So that is as far as the court can go, though. Unfortunately, the prediction of life expectancy would have been in the papers, I believe, when the medical experts gave evidence to say somebody who's in this situation per past experience, we have seen that they last X, Y, and Z. But you never know. This person may last much, much longer
Absolutely.
Than that.
Absolutely. And someone must be paying for that healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Ntabi Seng on 086-000-0959. Voice notes as well can come through on 063-688-0959 for any legal questions. It's best to do it before 10 o'clock because I know a lot of you do it just as we're about to leave and we don't get enough time to respond to your questions. So any legal question, Ntabi Seng Dubazana is here on 086-000-0959. Voice notes you can also send on 063-688-0959. You can also text, by the way, on that WhatsApp number.
Point of View. Legal Matters.
Legal Matters are brought to you by Ntabi Seng Dubazana, who's here to take also your questions, 086-000-0959, or voice notes or text on 063-688-0959. You've got another case for us, Ntabi Seng?
Yes. So it actually kind of mirrors the one we spoke of earlier for DNA testing, but this time not with adults, but with a minor. So what happened is that the deceased had an intimate relationship with the respondent's mother. The respondent alleges that they are a biological children. No. I'm confused. I'm rereading the one we just did. My apologies. My apologies. Here's the one that I'm looking for. Yeah, this is the one. So Hyundai gets itself in a mess. Mm. I think we've spoken a little bit about the responsibility when it comes to payments.
Yes.
Who is responsible to ensure that the banking details are correct? We've dealt with a case that was similar to this in the past. Mm. So in this situation, Hyundai decides to buy NP200s from a company called Imoto Pty Ltd. So it bought it for 290,000. And then emails were exchanged and everything. And then eventually says, pay into this account.
And there is the one buying.
Buying.
Okay.
So I'm assuming it's secondhand buckies.
Okay.
That they were going to sell also.
Okay.
So now, once the banking details have been given out, Hyundai waits a few days and then another email apparently comes in with banking details. And then they pay.
Yo.
290,000. By that time, the vehicles had already been delivered to Hyundai. So now the company Imoto is like, okay, but where's our money? Days are passing. Where's the money? And then they show the proof of payment. But when you look at the banking details, they're not the same. So now Hyundai is like, well, that's not our problem. You are the one that provided us with the banking details. You should have ensured that you gave us the correct information. So this company, Imoto, decides to take this matter to the regional court, magistrate court, to go compel Hyundai to pay 290,000. And then the magistrate court actually sides with them, Imoto, to say, yes, you, Hyundai, are responsible with ensuring that the amount, that the money you're going to pay goes into the correct account. So if you're saying that you got two different emails, you should have called or sent an email and confirm which of these two is the one that is correct. And then when they lost in the regional court, they then appealed to the high court. The high court overturns the match court to say, no, it's not Hyundai's problem. The problem is Imoto. Imoto should have made sure that when payment is going to be made, that did you get the correct banking details? And therefore, it overturns the match court matter. Imoto's like, nah, it can't be. Then they appeal it to the SCA. And then the SCA says the High Court doesn't seem to understand the principles of the law. You bear the onus as the person who's going to pay into the account to make sure that the account you are going to pay into is the correct account.
And, you know, even in your own personal capacity, you do have that responsibility. It sits with you.
Yes.
If I'm going to pay in Tabiseng, I do sit with the responsibility of making sure I'm paying into the right account.
Yes.
It's your job to check and double check and double check that Ntabiseng's account is the right one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly what the SCA said. Because remember the one we talked about, I think last year, involved a law firm actually that did not look at the banking details and paid someone else. And then now they were saying that they cannot be blamed for that. Cyber crimes are everywhere, so they should be exempt from all of this. So the SCA went further to say Hyundai did not prove it made payments into the correct account as per the Intengo's instructions. And then it said that that the onus of proof remained with Hyundai to establish that payments were made correctly, and that failure to do so did not absolve Hyundai of its payment obligations. So you pay 290 to whoever. You still owe 290 to the actual person and costs and interest on that 290.
It's interesting that their first instinct was not to get the bank to reverse the money. They became
hostile.
I must find a nice word. They became those people.
Yes. Mm. Mm-hmm. So now they were now dealing with, I'm going to be paying double the amount because 290 still has to come out. And I'm going to pay interest that's due on that 290. And I'm going to pay costs stemming from match court.
Yo.
all the way up to the SCA.
Yeah. Okay, and you've got another one, Tabise?
Yes. Remember last week, or the week before, one of the two, we were talking about customary marriages and the deceased.
Yeah.
So this case was decided in the Mbombela High Court. In the Mbombela High Court, what happened is that they had to deal with the issue of consent in customary marriages. The deceased is late in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is that the deceased dies, and then when he dies, his wife, current wife, goes to the pension fund, the GEPF, to go and claim monies from the GEPF. I don't know if I've said this before, but I think I probably have. The pension funds, apart from this, just a side note, the Pension Funds Act says even if you are registered as the only beneficiary to that thing, you can't have all that money.
Oh.
They are going to do their investigations first, go through the financial life of the deceased, and then see if there were any people that were dependent on this particular individual while he was still alive. So if the 5,000 that the girlfriend allowance is in Zedizwa, 2,000 is going to his mom, 3,000 is going to a niece, whatever the case may be. If this money is consistently going out, I think if it's 6 months consecutive, then those people are going to be called in to become beneficiaries of that pension fund. So now, apart from this, the Pension Funds Act dictates that those people need to be found first. So if you're going to be entitled to 1 million, that million is going to be torn apart. So that the people who are being supported.
So how do they know what ratio to use?
They usually look at the amounts that will be given out and then try and just divide. I don't know how what mathematics that they use to do that, but then that's how they usually would do. So you sometimes end up getting even less than 50% of that in pension fund that was due, that would have been due to you in the first place.
Sure. And I'll be saying there's a question before we continue there. It's from Lerato, who says, hi, Ospimelo. Can you ask Ausentabi Seng to please explain what is a legal separation in a marriage? How does one apply for it? Also, can the couple still share a home while legally separated, or would one party be compelled to move out? I have a very interesting case. True story, guys. I'm not making this up. I know a couple who have been divorced, I think it's 15 years now.
Yeah.
And are not separated, are divorced.
Yes.
Live in the same house.
I know someone like that.
And there's no problem.
Yeah.
The one person lives on in the one side of the house. It's not a big house, by the way.
Yeah.
And the one person lives in there. They share the kitchen, I think. And I think, if I remember, they share the lounge. In other words, they negotiate. I've got my visitors today.
Mm-hmm.
Give me space. Mm. I've got my visitors today. Give me space. But they came to that decision after having gone through the divorce, or whether they were still preparing for it. They realized none of them could afford to buy a new house.
Yeah.
And this is the best scenario. And they had a child together. They still have a child together. They did not want to be away from the child. They still wanted the child to have the benefit of both.
Some sort of normalcy.
Both parents. And so that's how they came to that decision.
Interesting. Mm. I did a divorce 4 years ago. They were an elderly couple, but they chose not to sell the property, and they were going
to
live.
Yeah, they were also a bit elderly.
Yeah, they're going to live in the property separately.
Yeah, they also are elderly, but Bona is it's like in the house. It's not like in the same yard with two cottages. No, inside
exactly,
the same house.
Exactly the same thing. Mm. And then, but then in that one, they had decided that the husband, because the yard was pretty big, the husband had already started building a cottage some years ago. So there was a time limit that he will finish up. But in the interim, they'll be living in the property. But to answer the question,
what's a legal separation?
There's no such thing in our law.
I'm sorry. Hey, Matot. And maybe there are other questions, Lerato. Why would you... Okay, let's maybe explore why a person would want a legal separation. It's because they're not ready to have
the divorce yet.
Or they want to test it out.
Yeah, maybe they want to see whether there's a way to solve it, but being in under the same roof, it's not working out. Or perhaps the finances are also a problem and they are looking at how to recover, but with their finances separated. Unfortunately, you cannot have a legal separation in our country. There's no such thing. So if you are married in commutative property and you are legally separated, that's your agreement with your partner. It has nothing to do with the law. And if you continue to go in debt and he continues to go in debt, when you decide eventually to divorce...
It's still his debt.
It's still his debt. It's still your debt. It's really simply that. There's absolutely nothing you can do. So I would rather suggest, if there is no clear vision on whether or not we're going to divorce, go for counseling. See if there's a way for you guys to solve the issues. If there's no way to solve the issues, that counseling will also assist in an amicable divorce. But the one earlier saying you're getting into trouble.
And I'm saying, why do you... Is there such a thing as an amicable divorce?
I've done a few amicable divorces. Saras, the settlement agreement come from amicable divorce. They start with a fight. But eventually, we end up divorcing amicably, agreeing that what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine.
She says amicably, as in after the fight.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as amicable. It just means that the fight happened at some stage.
Yes. So let's see if we can meet. Just leave the fight to the individuals, not in the courtroom. Because when you take it to the courtroom, it becomes expensive. So rather be safe than sorry. Let's fight here.
But there is mediation as an option as well.
Yes. And right? Now if the matter is strictly going to be in the High Court, for example, you are forced to do mediation, Rule 41A. But even in the lower courts, there's always mediators that are within the court that are appointed in the match court who can assist with that so that they can be of assistance in terms of how to solve these issues.
Okay, we've got Jabu in Kempton Park. Hello, Jabu.
Yes, evening, ladies. How are you?
Fine, how are you, Jabu?
I'm good. I hope you guys are keeping on.
We are. Thank you.
Man, I have two questions for you, too.
Hey, and it.
The first one is with respect to the uniform rule.
Mm-hmm.
Rule 7-1.
Remind me what Rule 7-1 is.
Rule 7-1 is with respect to the mandate of representation. If Dubazana attorney says they are representing Pinelo,
mm-hmm.
and we request them to be able to prove or they have that power of attorney.
The authority of anyone acting on behalf of a party, right? Okay, we are together.
My question is with respect to civil claims or to a criminal litigation, does the basis differ or it remains the same?
Okay. Civil litigation, absolutely very different from criminal. Ne? But what we try and do, hopefully, all of us in this space, is that we make our clients sign what we call a mandate agreement or a consent form, which then confirms that I'm going to appear on your behalf in this particular matter. In civil litigation, the manner in which I introduce myself, in quotes, to be your legal representative, it is to draft what we call a notice of appointment as attorneys of record. So whomever is on the other side and I'm new on the matter, that's how I say I'm the new attorney, I've been appointed, right? But if we are the ones starting the litigation in civil proceedings, whether it is in the notice of motion or it's in the summons, we are going to put our information there at the end. It will say applicants, attorneys with our address and full information. Or if it's in the summons, it will be the plaintiff's address, the plaintiff's attorneys with our full address and everything. In criminal court, there's no real duty to draft something like that. You literally just appear on the day and then you confirm your appearance on behalf of the accused and then people just move on. The only thing that they require, not all courts, but it's supposed to be that way, they're going to ask for your FFC to show that you are a valid practicing attorney in the criminal court.
Thank you. My secondary question now is, in a case whereby you would let us assume the body corporate, Pimelo and myself, and then Pimelo decides to draft in her own capacity to say that actually we have appointed Duwazana attorneys to represent the body corporate and to represent Jabu.
So
the court without Jabu submitting a power of attorney either to Pimelo or Duwazana and the body corporate in that result. Because remember now, there will be two parties that keep to have actually draft what we would refer to as a resolution to be able to represent Jabu and the body corporate.
So you're asking if Duwazana attorneys would be required to draft a power of attorney and submit it to the court?
Simplified form. So now that Pimelo has acquired services at Duwazana attorney, Pimelo then writes a resolution saying to you, Duwazana attorney, bear in mind or let have a little represent a Jabu. There's a body corporate, which will be about 500 owners.
Okay.
So what actually puzzles me is, does Pimelo have that authority to instruct you as Duwazana attorneys to represent the 500 of us as the body corporate and to represent Jabu as an individual or juridical?
Okay, I get you now.
Ah.
So these are separate matters.
Yeah.
So it has to be whether if... Pimelo does not have the powers from the body corporate to appoint Duwazana attorneys, then that appointment is null and void. You guys have to now deal with it with your own selves. Mola, it's your internal issues. It has nothing to do with the court. But if none of you also stand up and say, of the 500, no one knows of this appointment, Duwazana attorneys for this particular matter, then Duwazana will assume that Pimelo has those powers because all the 500 have not said anything. Therefore, that they are tacitly agreeing. And then I will draft my appointment as an attorney of record. I don't need a power of attorney from anyone. So that resolution may be deemed as a consent or a mandate agreement that I will assist you in this matter. It really has no bearing on the actual litigation. So you guys, the body corporate, all 500 of you, have to decide what you're going to do about Pimelo having done this without your consent. Because how na moitle ating, it won't even get to court. It has to be dealt with you guys. Kahari.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you, Jabu.
Have a lovely evening, lady.
Thank you very much. Should we take a quick break? Let's do that, and we'll be back with more. 086-000-959. Voice notes and text can also come through on 063-688-0959.
On Kaya 959.
With Pimelo Modine.
What's yours?
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. And Thabiso Duwazana is here. Any legal question you have, we have Thabiso here to take it for you. You can send a voice note. You can also do that anonymously. You can send a text as well on a WhatsApp number, 063-688-0959. You can call if you like as well. It's actually easier. 086-000-959. Let's take a listen to a voice note.
Hi, Pimelo. Hi, everybody in the studio. Hi to the listeners. Pimelo, I just actually jumped into the topic. I understand that you guys are talking legal matters. I just have a quick question to the attorney in the studio there, or the legal practitioner there. Ma'am, I was charged 3 years ago with a matter between my wife and I, and I'm still charged. I've never appeared in front of the magistrate. I was only charged, locked in for few hours at the court cells, and then I was released. They say they're still going to, my file is not complete. And that was 2022. Yeah, that was 2022. They said my file, they're still going to investigate my file, and then still then I've never been called to appear in court. It's been 3 years. I'm fighting for this issue to be removed because it still appears on my as a pending credit criminal record. Is that allowed? Is that legal that I can be charged for such a long time?
So the fact that you never appeared, it means you were never charged. All that happened is that you were arrested. So just because you were at charge office and the police say to you that you are charged, doesn't necessarily that mean that you were charged. The only time you get charged is when you appear in front of a magistrate and then they say you are charged with the crime of X, Y, and Z. Ne? So with that being said, when you were in the cells, they ought to have given you what we call your rights sheet. So it's a document with red writing and black writing there. On that document in pen, they should have written what is called your CAS number, your CAS number. With that CAS number, go to the police station wherein you are arrested. That docket has to be somewhere. If they can't find it, then you go to the court in which you were supposed to appear, or where that police station is attached to, or the jurisdiction yating. Then you go with the CAS number and you ask the SPP, Senior Public Prosecutor, about the case. If nothing comes of it, then you go back to the police station and you request that this issue of the matter being pending be removed, so that the SPP can be instructed to draft what we call a withdrawal of the charges, so that it can be updated on your SAP 69s. That is the best way to find to eliminate all of these things. So start at the police station, show them the CAS number if you have this document, and then follow the steps thereafter. Should be hopefully easy enough for you. Hopefully.
So it's not called charged, it's called what?
You're just being arrested.
So what appears every time that he's referring to? He says it appears
as a pending matter.
Oh,
so,
I see.
Because when you get arrested, your fingerprints are taken and also DNA is swabbed. They enter that information into their system.
Mm.
And because the docket hasn't been nullied or anything of the sort, in their system, the SAP 69 show it as pending.
There's an anticipation that it will go ahead
Correct. So until the prosecutor, who's basically instructing the police on what to do, does something, it will forever remain pending. So that's why you need to find the docket with your CAS number, and then with that docket, you request that it either be nullied or the SPP do something about it. You need to know what is happening there. And also, is your wife still interested in the matter? Because if she's not, they have to withdraw the charges.
Well, I was going to say, would she actively have to do something?
Yes, she would have to do that. She have to make a statement of withdrawal so that she can just withdraw the charges. I have a case now. It's been postponed 4 or 5 times. The witness, the first report, doesn't want to give evidence anymore. She feels that the case is useless. So the prosecutor is requesting a formal document for you to not come and give evidence. And she's supposed to be the main witness. She doesn't care about the case. So same thing. This would be the situation. You have to make a statement.
And if you ignore it, we deem it that you are still coming.
Yeah, you're still coming. You're still going to do something. And
so you can be spiteful and just leave it.
That's the thing. And the investigating officer has to communicate with someone, the complainant or the accused, to find out.
In the event that someone does not want to go ahead with whatever, whether they want to withdraw or not, it's just that she wants to be doing nothing about it.
Yeah.
But is not interested in pursuing the case.
Mm.
What then?
Wena, as the accused, be as active as this gent is, so that you can move the matter. But if the witness or the complainant is not doing anything, it just hangs and nobody really does anything about it. It just stays there.
Can we compel a person to do something?
You can make an application in the High Court to compel them to do so. Because the Match Court would be like, but I don't have the powers to do this. So now it's more money on the person who's taking it to the High Court to compel this person to withdraw the application because it's been pending for 3 years.
Okay. I hope it answers your question, and I hope it's clear.
Yeah.
Ntabi saying we were interrupted
yes.
while we were still talking. Yes, go ahead.
So The deceased was married in 2017, customarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2019, and the marriage was not formally registered, as they always are. And then in 2019, he entered into a relationship with the respondent. And this was in terms of a civil marriage. It was on the 23rd of November 2020 that the civil marriage happened. So now the court was asked to determine the validity of the first marriage under customary law.
Which was 2019?
2017, the first marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then B, the second marriage, whether the second marriage, yes, invalidated the first marriage. And then C, the coexistence of both marriages under the relevant South African law. And then the court said, in terms of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, when it comes to polygamy, consent of the first wife is an absolute. So this man married this woman, the second wife, without the knowledge of the first wife. So as a result, there was lack of consent there. Then the court said, now that we established that part, was this first marriage 2017 valid or not? What does the Recognition of Customary Marriages say? Are you 18? Did you give consent? And were the processes followed? Doesn't have to be fully followed, by the way. Okay. And these questions were answered. And then therefore, it means the first marriage 2017 is valid. Therefore, with all of that, it means a second marriage, whether we look at it in the context of customary marriage
or civil,
is null and void. So the second marriage is not recognized. It doesn't exist. So this current wife for 2020 cannot be deemed to be the one to be assigned to wind up the estate. The actual wife is the one from 2017.
Mm. And in reality, they thought, but they just moved. So do we know what the guy's intention was? Were they in the process of a divorce?
No.
Or did he intend for them to be a stepu situation?
There was no stepu situation. They married in 2017 with wife A. And then
he was like,
I'm done with you. I'm moving on. And then he found wife B. And then married her and made it into a civil marriage. And then
thinking he's clever.
Correct. And thinking that it's over and done with. I don't need to do anything.
I suppose, again, we are back to the warning.
Yes.
To those of you who have, because you know this happens a lot.
Too much, actually.
It happens a lot. Where someone sometimes, and I think there's also that confusion where you need to always clarify about the understanding sometimes, and let's say, if we stick with customary, the understanding of the guy who arrives and say, for instance, they say, utlontsha damages. They sometimes say that, right?
Mm.
And how that is framed in
so
different
important.
Cultures.
So important.
Because have you understood damages to be
Mahadi?
Exactly.
Or was it strictly damages?
Exactly.
This question was asked of me over the weekend, actually.
Because your understanding, your interpretation of what you thought you were doing and the interpretation of those who were in the receiving end, was it the same thing?
Mm.
And halongwala, lingwezi la ring, did you say?
So important.
What in that piece of paper, how did you frame
correct.
What you were saying?
Mm. Mm. So important. Because once we...
Because if you say, we appeared... What does that mean? Hutahella means or nabato kokota. What does kokota mean? Huh? There are many other words, ne?
Very
to
many.
To explain this thing.
Very many. So it needs to be so clear.
Nabato kupasejo. Because if you now directly translate, they were coming to ask for the seho.
Mm.
Does it mean they have asked for the seho?
Or
they were coming to ask, and does the seho come with as a human being, or is it the baby, or is it the acknowledgement of the pregnancy?
That paper has to be clear.
Jabulani Inzola is on the line with us this evening. Jabulani, hi.
Sanibonani njani?
Siyaphila njani?
Ngisaphila. Yabo indaba le nikhulumayo i-critical ne. So I would ask a lawyer yes the homework on this issue. Angithi ukulobola kunobutsotsi phakathi.
Okay.
Yeah, ukulobola nokuhlala kunobutsotsi because belo ngakumithisa ne. Bese sikhipha iletter sithi sizohlawula. Ne? In the letter we written sizohlawula umntwana ama damages. Masifika phakathi sithi hayi asahlawuli. Sesizwa kuzululu.
And wena jabu ngikutshele enye into ngokulobola and the process problem. The owners of the situation are not sitting in that room.
It's a delegation.
And then bayahlangana labantu laba. Bavumelana ukuthi hayi le ngane lezi. Hayi. Asiqede le ndaba. Nikutheni zohlawula abanye bathi no there's no need. Ngoba senifikile nasihlonipha. Ningasahlawuli. But vele qhubekani ngale ndaba niyamthatha ingane, then they agree. Wena jabu had no intention of taking the lady bozohlawula. Wena you are being an honorable man.
Yeah, and manje ke yazi bese yenzaniki. Angithi the law, when we put the law, everything that is signed
is
legally
binding.
Uma besayina usayina labantu abawu-4
abawu-5 bafaka amatshali nani
lalela iba treating into eyi-1 nomuntu wesifazane uyasayina khona lapho ukuthi uyayivuma lena. Then what happens there?
So unfortunately ke jabu, the fact that mhlambe in isiZulu a woman is not allowed or not permitted to be there, or maybe ngesiXhosa yabo, the fact that a woman is not allowed to be there, the court doesn't really consider it, unfortunately. So what the court looks at is, were these people 18? Was there consent? And was there an agreement that this is going to happen now? So if when you find out that when you send bomalume balohlawula, but in that little pepechani, when it comes back, that piece of paper, it says something else, go back. Make them do something that is what is your intention, because that piece of paper, if you remain on ngayishinshi, it becomes a problem. Because when next are you going to be like, mina ngihlawulile one time saying I want to marry uPhimelo manje, now this paper is a problem for you because you never did anything about it, you never changed it, you never took it to court, you never did anything. So now I come back after you make your millions and then I'm gonna come and ask for money. And I always say, Kiri, you know, people ask Kore, if she doesn't know or if he doesn't know, does it really matter? Because this one is the one that has umfazwe paper. It's a civil marriage, nan. I don't really have to start a process of divorce. There's a case in Mthatha. This woman came after 40 years with that piece of paper and then claimed everything from this woman, Lana. So even if you think they don't know, someone somewhere is telling them. So just fix stuff, yabo. Yeah.
Hey, diabo.
Diabo.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks. We've got Edwin in the West Rand. Hello, Edwin.
Yeah. Okay. Hello.
Hello. Welcome, Edwin.
Yeah. Quickly, you know what? My younger brother, he paid lobola to this lady, but now the marriage or whatever the relationship is no longer there. But now the lady, he said, no, he wants 50% of the house, 50% of the pensions. You know, is it really legally or is it proper? Because I feel it's just uncalled for.
Unfortunately, it's the law. She has all the right in the world. When you pay lobola or mahad, you automatically get married in community of property. Unless you draft an ANC, anti-nuptial contract, before mahadi is paid, then your marriage can be out of community of property with that ANC incorporated. So that woman is well within her rights. Like I was telling Jabu just now, there's a woman who got married 40 years ago. When this man died after 40 years, after having been married for 6 years to his current wife. This current wife was told, Mama, you're not the wife. The wife is this one, 40 years ago, that was only married customarily. So what I would suggest is that your brother goes and sees an attorney with this woman, come to a settlement agreement, because it can get very messy. She's entitled to not only his assets, but also his debts. So let them be aware of that.
But also what she said you must come and like sort of the, well, because we wrote that letter, so that to come and cancel the, so that she's free.
To write what letter?
Remember, we write a letter, an agreement.
So no, my person. No, you divorce. You do not end a marriage, guy, a piece of letter written to the family or whatnot. It does not, it's not binding in our law. You have to divorce. Okay.
Thanks, Edwin. Okay, there's a question. I suspect you're going to have to come back to respond to this and another voice note. So a few people are asking questions. It's please ask on a legal recognition and protection of same-sex customary, in inverted commas, marriages. If we consider S93 of the Constitution, so Section 93 of the Constitution, the Customary Equality Marriages Act should be amended to enable same-sex couples to enter into such marriages, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including polygamous marriage.
Mm.
The Recognition of Customary Marriage Act 120 of 1998, a review of its implications for same-sex couples, Dirabas recently read this article, I think.
Mm.
I'm not asking out of boredom. I'm really curious.
Mm. So right now, the one act that deals with same-sex couples is the Civil Union Act. Ne? That's how you get married as same-sex couples. The Recognition of Customary Marriages, yes, I agree. It would have to be developed in order for it to accommodate parties in same-sex relationships who want to be married customarily. Ne? So, but still with that, the requirements I don't think would change much. But that's why we are having the Ibiza and the Marriage Act, a bill, sorry, that is still being discussed to see whether it can accommodate all these marriage regimes under one umbrella instead of having so many different laws governing the different marriages. But yes, and in terms of Section 9 equality, it's not there in terms of the customary marriages. I agree with you there.
Okay. We'll have to cut it short here and we'll come back to the other questions for next week. Thank you so much, Ntabi Seng. Really appreciate it. We will see you next week.
Next week.
Thanks, everybody. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.